It's Friday! Ooh, you can say that again. Yay! Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
It is Friday, heading into the holiday weekend on a holiday. It's a federal holiday today, Juneteenth, as Americans celebrate Juneteenth, the federal holiday commemorating the end of slavery in the United States of America. A blend of the words June and 19th. It marks June 19th, 1865, when Union Army Major General Gordon Granger arrived in Galveston, Texas, and proclaimed that enslaved African Americans were free. Didn't they get it late, though? I mean,
it was like two years after the Emancipation Proclamation was.
Yeah, so it was late.
I feel
better late than never, but.
Yeah, I kind of feel like they probably slow-walked that. They probably could have let them know much sooner than 2 years after.
I think you're correct. So, and it's also the weekend of Father's Day this Sunday. If you're lucky enough to still have your father with you, please go out of your way to thank him for everything, tell him you love him while you have this very special opportunity. Use Father's Day if that's what it needs. Bury any hatchets you might have, whatever concerns you might have. This is your father, and you will not have him forever. So, as far as a Juneteenth goes, a wonderful piece written by a guy we haven't had on in years, the Honorable Michael Warren, Oakland County, Michigan Circuit Court Judge, author of the newly released book, The Revolutionary Words That Forged America, The Definitive Guide to the Declaration of Independence. It is just newly released, 2026, Republic Books, the publisher, and it's written by our old friend, the Honorable Michael Warren, the Oakland County, Michigan Circuit Court Judge. And he has a piece in today's The Award-Winning Detroit News on the opinion page. It's Juneteenth should unite all Americans. Good for you, Your Honor, Michael Warren. Very nice to see that. Today we Detroit News has released their 2026 Michiganians of the Year. And posthumously, Mike Bernard, sadly, a whole bunch of people, can't name them all real quick, but folks that have been near and dear to us and on the show, Mike Tirico, Nancy Tellem, Megan Keller, Sandy Pierce, among many others. Please pick up your Detroit News or go online and see the story written by the one and only Nolan Findlay, the 2026 Michiganians of the Year.
Oh, that's quite a project for Nolan.
It is a big project. It's a lot of work. He has a team that helps him, and it sounded familiar, and here's why. I don't always remember these things, but in 2011, I was honored to be listed in that school or that grouping of Michiganians of the Year. That was in 2011, before you were born, Mike. So we have that. Birthdays coming up. If it's yours today, happy birthday to you. Through the weekend, mostly I think on Sunday, Norman Yatuma, my old friend also Jim Miller, who I started in radio in Monroe with WVMO, the voice of Monroe. Jim Miller's birthday today. And I don't know if I have this right or not, but I have it as Rocky Rechkowski and his lovely wife Amelia's birthday today.
Oh.
So I don't know if that's possible. They both have the birthday today, or it's just my bad note-taking. As far as today goes, again, if it's your birthday, happy birthday to you. I have written down that it is Chris Schepler of the famed Schepler's Ferry family, his birthday. Don't know where he is right now, but happy birthday to you, Chris. What else? Well, we've got the team. Mike Parsons, our executive producer, Danielle Mason, the queen of the switches, and Rich Luzinski, the Richmeister. I haven't been getting little creative things that Rich has been doing lately, and they just came to me on my Instagram, Paul W. Spinsta, but I don't see him anymore. So, I don't know what's going on with that. I'm sure he's still doing creative stuff.
Yeah, the algorithm likes to switch up.
Why is that? What's the point?
I don't know. I think they're probably like, oh, well, there's certain creators that know how to hack the algorithm and they're making too much money off of us, so they probably switch it up. I really don't know.
So was Rich making money off these things that I would see?
No.
How do you make money?
No, well, I don't know. I mean, if I knew how to make money, I'd have more money.
Me too.
But, yeah, it's just a theory as to why the algorithm seems to switch every few months.
I congratulate CBS and even this very Democrat-leaning piece, CNN's Five Things in the Morning we get that I look at and use. They at least have the honest reporting skills to say, while everyone's making fun of President Trump and the problems with the reflecting pool, this has been an ongoing problem. And CBS first said it. It was like four different times in the history of that reflecting pond where they've had algae problems. So this is not a new problem, as much as you want to pick on President Trump and make fun of him and blah, blah, blah. These are, as in the words of the democratically controlled liberal piece here from CNN, the latest complication in the pool's long-running maintenance woes. From persistent algae, bird waste, smelly water, and dead ducks.
Yeah, just get a good pool guy out there. I feel like a good pool guy could probably fix that problem.
I can't believe, honestly, I mean, if there is something to complain about, and of course there always is something to complain about, Paul, but there are plenty of pool people out there that deal with this sort of thing, I'm going to say, all the time. I mean...
Right.
Did these people who he hired for I don't know, $14 million, whatever the heck it was, did they know what they were doing, I guess is the,
right.
the way.
Throw some chlorine in there.
And now they're putting in they were putting in acid and all this other stuff. Why didn't they call my friend Keith Anderson, Keith and his lovely wife Janet, from Anderson Pools, the people that have been doing our pool forever, that I first learned about from Frank Beckman, having his pool serviced by Keith Anderson. Well, Anderson Pools, they were just here yesterday and doing a fine job on our pool. I bet he could have done this job. But now the paint is peeling up, the whole thing, it's a mess.
I was going to say, that'd be a nice gig for a pool person, and they probably could do it for half the price.
I bet he would have done it for $7 million
right.
instead of $14 million. But
right.
be that as it may, speaking of money, and you know, look, the president, each president having to have their own library has been something I've always kind of railed against. I don't get it. Now, Gerald Ford's library is a very simple, wonderful place here in Michigan. Very nice. It did not cost anywhere close to $850 million. $1 million?
Wow.
Do you know how much money $850 million is? And that's apparently what President Barack Obama's lovely facility and park and everything open to America, that's $850 million, just short of $1 billion. This from that end of the aisle who would complain hugely about what other good things could have been happening with that $850 million. Now, I'm not just blaming him. I look a little askance on everybody's individual library. How do you feel about that, Mr. Parsons?
Yeah, I didn't know they cost that much. I mean,
well, they don't. Yeah. This one did.
I mean, I'm not sure what the point of a presidential library is. I mean, you would hope that this would at least come from private donations, I'm guessing, but
I suspect there was a lot of private money in
yeah,
that.
But I don't know. Have you ever heard anyone said, "Man, I can't wait to go to the Harry S. Truman Presidential Library," or whoever?
No, I've heard it. I think, isn't it in Grand Rapids, Gerald Ford?
Yeah, the Gerald Ford one is in Grand Rapids.
Across the river. I've gone in there. I thought it was fascinating, but it's a small little place that could not have come anywhere close to $850 million. I don't know, you know, and now they've already made jokes about President Trump President Trump's library be very small because he's only read three books. But, you know, I mean, they're all going to make fun of it. And I'm just saying it surprised me. Looks like quite a place, but it did surprise me that could cost that much money. That's all. I don't know. That's all. What else? Anything else? I got the Juneteenth in there. I got this. I got that. We've got a lot to do today and interesting guests, some old, some new, and we'll speak to an old guest coming up here in just a moment. And I don't mean she's old as we continue in focus on this Friday, Juneteenth, federal holiday. The things you thought were open are not today, and there's no trading on the stock market. And it is the weekend of Father's Day come Sunday, so don't forget that too. As we continue, Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. We welcome back on this Juneteenth our United States Congresswoman, Michigan 6th District, longtime pal, Debbie Dingell. Congresswoman Dingell, happy Juneteenth.
Happy Juneteenth, Paul W. I hope you're doing well.
I'm doing well. Did you lose your voice yelling somewhere?
I've been out and about talking with a lot of people. So, yeah, I am losing my voice.
Really? Is there anything to talk about these days? I can't imagine.
So quiet. So dull.
Hey, did you think about going to the Obama opening of his library?
You know, it would have been great to have been there, but I'm sort of at a point in my life to have seen friends and to have done all that. I have a lot of things going on in my district right now, Paul W. People are really worried about a lot of things, from, you know, housing to, I've got projects that I'm working with HUD on to get cleaned up. I'm meeting with people right now. I stepped out of a meeting. I'm in a beautiful part of my district, God's Country agriculture area, where there's discussion of consumers building a power plant. The community's very, very, very upset. So I'd rather be with my constituents, hearing what's on their mind and dealing with those issues.
Well, I know you well, and I believe you completely. I understand why you're doing that. Your constituents have always come first, and that goes way back to when you and John had my hometown of Monroe, Michigan. And you always came. You were in the parade, you know, the Monroe County Fair Parade, all that. You were always there. You were always involved with your constituents, and that continues to be the case. So a few things that I know are important to you. The federal immigration officials plan to decide to, I guess, offload is one of the words being used, a warehouse in Romulus, and for that matter, other similar sites across the U.S., that they were going to use as a ICE detention center. Talk to me about that.
Well, I think Mark Reynolds, who I know, realized the inappropriateness of these warehouses and the way that they were set up to be detention centers. Even, you know, really, does a detention center belong in Romulus in southeast Michigan? No. So I know it had been challenged in the courts, but this wasn't a court win. This was the court of public opinion, where people in the community were very concerned about it. People throughout southeast Michigan, their voices joined with others in other areas. And I think this is a win for people who get discouraged, think people don't listen to them. What difference do they make? They made a difference. And this is a win for Romulus and a win for southeast Michigan.
Your thoughts on the, as we know it, at least at this moment, the so-called Iran deal?
So I haven't seen it. This has not been shared with Congress yet. I'm hoping that maybe we get a classified briefing next week. I won't see it. I mean, we haven't seen it. So I'm hoping, you know, what I'm hearing, I don't know why we went to war. I don't know. I've always said that. I've thought that the president needed to come back to the Congress. The War Powers Resolution says 60 days of action by our military requires that happens.
Well, we know that there are other presidents in our past, including Democratic presidents, that did not do that. And so you could see how they suggested that they didn't need to do it either. Just as by way of inserting one of the facts involved in not going to Congress.
But I am all going to say that one of those presidents also negotiated a deal to deal. Look, I want to be really clear. A nuclear Iran is dangerous to everybody. It's dangerous to world peace. Let's be clear.
I'm so glad you said
being
that.
Close,
you know, a lot of your truth. Colleagues forget and, to say that.
Well, I mean, it's true. And also these regimes, you know, the former regime was brutal. They killed thousands of people.
So we can agree that no matter what, Iran has been greatly defanged in many ways, not completely.
Well, I don't know that it has because, you know, the president said a year ago that he had destroyed all of their nuclear capability. I don't know what's there. I don't know what's in the agreement. How are we going to inspect them? How are we going to make sure that they, you know, they really don't have nuclear capability? And I need to stop seeing the bombing of Lebanon. People, you know, their family.
Well, I know that they're family.
They are family. So
they have to do something about Hezbollah, and I'm not sure what they can do because you can't ask Israel or any other country to just stand by while people are bombing them.
And, you know, I'm getting the same reports you are. Let's just be really honest and clear about that right now. But apparently the president and Netanyahu had words and they're not on the same page. So, you know, I know what we all want, and I don't want war, and I want gasoline prices to go down, and I want...
Which they are, thank goodness. Which they are.
So we need... slowly. But we need facts, and that's what we need to see it. Hopefully we'll get a briefing next week.
I'm going to let you go back into your meeting. We've got so many other things to talk about. We will, data centers, et cetera. Okay. It's always a pleasure and a privilege to say hello to you on the radio here. United States Congresswoman, Michigan 6th District Congresswoman Debbie Dingell. Have a great weekend.
You have a great weekend, too. Thank you.
Thank you. 1229 at 760 WJR. It's Friday, Juneteenth, a federal holiday. A lot of things you thought were open are not. No mail today, no stock market trading. I think banks are closed. What else, Mike? Am I missing anything there? It's a federal holiday, so just like any other federal holiday, lots of stuff closed for the day.
Yeah, let's see. You said banks, post office.
Yeah.
Your local municipal swimming pool, probably.
Oh, wow.
I'm just trying to think of anything government-owned.
Yeah, okay. Well, I know that the Obama Center is open to the public today. Isn't that kind of unusual? I guess it's timing-wise, but they had a big party there yesterday, but today is the opening to the public. And, you know, you have to, I think it's free, I don't know, but you have to have tickets, and the tickets are gone for months.
Wow.
That's how many people want to get in there and see that thing. It's a most unusual building, and it's an $850 million building.
A presidential library is something that I would just, like, go to if I decided that day and I had nothing else going on. I wouldn't get tickets in advance.
Something you would have made the trip for?
Correct.
Yeah. All right. Well, I bet State Senator Kevin Hertel, the Democrat from St. Clair Shores, might want to go. And why not? He happens to be right now getting some attention as one of seven state Senate Democrats introducing legislation to hold data centers accountable. Good for you, Senator Hertel. How are you?
I'm good, Paul W. How are you?
I am excellent. Are you planning on getting to see President Obama's library?
I don't think I'm going to make it out there anytime soon. As you mentioned, it's a federal holiday. I respect the holiday, but I am here working and focused on getting a budget done by July 1 here in the state of Michigan.
Well, I salute you for that, and I'm allegedly working as well. Let's talk a little bit about these data centers. I can't remember anything that's gotten as much attention in the last several years as these data centers. And you've got people who absolutely strongly believe in them, and you've got people who absolutely strongly are against them. And I appreciate that what you're saying is that the data centers should be held accountable for their usage of power, their usage of water, and whatever else that you think. Tell me more.
Well, exactly that. They should be held accountable for the impact they could potentially have on our state. And for those that are concerned about data centers, and I hear that concern across my community, and I know others are hearing across the state, it's not unfounded. We have seen situations that have occurred in other states that we want to make sure don't happen here in the state of Michigan. And so the message we're sending with this legislation is, if you want to even look at coming to Michigan with one of these projects, you need to make sure that you are, number one, protecting our environmental resources, that you are entering into community benefit agreements with the communities that you are going into so that the residents of those communities see a benefit from these projects. But most importantly, making sure that both our water and our electric rates do not go up because of some of these projects. So if put into the law, if these bills were to pass, we would have some of the strictest regulation anywhere in the country, and I think that's exactly where Michigan needs to be.
You've been around a long time, and your family's been very much involved in civil service throughout the years. We could name a million of your family members who have served. You're talking about things that matter to a lot of people. And I'm trying to think of anything that was that in the beginning people were against also. I believe probably cell phone towers. People, you know, I don't get any good cell service. Well, we're going to put a cell tower across the street. No, not in my yard. Not across the street from my house. I mean, we've had things that we've been against in the past, and somewhere or another, things have worked out, and we're okay. I believe that after talking with guys like Jim Fitterling at Dow in Midland, with these projects that he's been working on, like these self-contained small nuclear energy producers that could actually take care of all of the energy needs of a single data center, and if they came up with a way to recycle the water properly, would you be more into it then?
That's exactly what we're trying to push, the conversation in that direction. There is technology that exists today, and I would imagine over the next decade it will only advance, that allow these data centers to operate in a much more efficient way with a less of an impact on all of our resources, both on the energy side and the water side. And simply what we're saying here is we want to make sure it's done in the right way here in the state of Michigan. We can be a leader in the country to show how this can be done the right way. The good news is none of these enterprise data centers exist in the state today, so we're starting from a more clean slate. We have learned from what has happened in other states across the country, and we're simply looking at what we've learned and trying to put protections in place here in Michigan so that that does not happen here.
And I don't deny any of the problems, but I agree with you, State Senator Kevin Hertel, that it would be fabulous if Michigan became well known as a state that has learned how to deal with data centers, to accept them and cover and protect their constituents, we the taxpayers, and then we get the benefits of whatever jobs they might create, and I don't know how many they would create, lots when they're building them, probably not nearly as many when they're built, but also from everything I hear, increasing tax base in a huge way, and then that affects and helps all of us. So, I mean, I think there are a lot of good things that can come out of this if we can do exactly what you're suggesting, figure out how to do it the best way for all of us.
I agree with you, Paul W. And some of those benefits are investments in our communities, local tax revenue to go to police and fire and roads, as well as school districts. And we've seen that happen across the country in many other communities. You can actually also, and there's a study that came out earlier this week that shows that one or two of these projects can lower utility rates or at least stop the constant increases that we're seeing here in the state.
How great is that?
You know, there are benefits that can be had, but I just want to reiterate, when we do it in a responsible way, I think we can all win.
Well put. Please give my best to the entire Hertel crew. I haven't talked to many of them in years, but I have talked to all of them over the years, including you, State Senator Kevin Hertel, the Democrat from St. Clair Shores. Have a wonderful weekend and a great Father's Day to all the Hertels that are fathers.
Thank you so much, Paul W. I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you so much. As we continue in focus on WJR at 1244. Oakland Community College, OCC, has educated over 1 million students since 1965. They offer more than 80 degrees and certificate programs committed to student success with affordable tuition, supportive services, flexible class options, and top transfer opportunities. They serve over 20,000 students annually, and they are served well by this man. He is the chancellor of Oakland Community College, and he is great. Chancellor Peter Provenzano. Mr.
Hey,
Chancellor, always a pleasure, sir.
Hey, Paul W., how are you?
I am excellent. I always love talking to you. If I ever thought we were going to be talking about a mastodon, I would be a little surprised. But Elmer the Mastodon is pretty famous. But tell those who don't know about Elmer the Mastodon, about the mastodon and the move.
Love to. You know, you're right. You and I have talked about so many things over the years, but this is a first.
It is.
Most people are surprised that we had this mastodon, which is really the whole point of this exciting partnership. So you and I have talked in the past about our big investment in health sciences at our Farmington Hills campus and how we're moving those programs there. And when we made that announcement, one of the first things I was asked by the folks at our campus was, what are you going to do with Elmer, our mastodon? And I promised that we would find a very exciting location for him. And originally the thought was that we would build a brand new exhibit at our new renovated space in Farmington Hills. And we wanted to find a way, though, to do it so that we could educate the community and enhance the way we're educating the community. And so when this partnership opportunity with Cranbrook came about, we knew this was the right answer, that it would allow us to do exactly that, but just at a much grander scale. Because now, you know, instead of hundreds of people seeing Elmer or being aware of him,
we've been on the campus for 50 years.
Yeah, so literally thousands of people are going to be able to hear OCC in this brand new exhibit at Cranbrook Institute. Hear us tell the story of Elmer and the significance of mastodons in our region.
Well, look, 50 years is nothing. Nothing to Elmer, who's about 10,000 years old. But it's been a pretty good 50 years. Not that I spoke to Elmer. Actually, I might have interviewed him several thousand years ago. I'm not sure. 12 feet tall, measuring 22 feet long. They think he would have weighed about 5.5 tons when he was alive. And how did you approach the folks at Cranbrook to suggest maybe a long-term arrangement, which is what you worked out, for them to have Elmer the mastodon?
Well, actually, it's a great story because they reached out to us. They emailed me, and the email was kind of like, hey, we heard you have this mastodon, and so they knew that we were going to be making a move, and so I saw the opportunity right away. And I think the significance is, I think this is just the first step of a much longer partnership, where we can offer joint programming, and I think there's an opportunity for Cranbrook. We're already talking about having them build exhibits in our facilities, you know, at our new health sciences building. And so I think there's an opportunity for joint programming, joint partnerships that go beyond Elmer. I think Elmer's really that first step. And I think that's what's really exciting. And, you know, another example of OCC working with the incredible assets that are out there and different organizations that exist around the county and around the region, and looking at ways that we can partner with them and find, you know, unique opportunities where we're better together. And I think when we do that, the community wins.
Chancellor Provenzano, we loved broadcasting from that fabulous new health sciences building not that long ago. And I congratulate you for the incredible job that you continue to do for everybody involved with Oakland Community College, and now with this Cranbrook Institute, the Cranbrook Institute of Science, which, of course, is a reminder, a natural history and science museum, fosters in its audiences a passion for understanding the world around them and a lifelong love of learning. So that ties in beautifully with what your goals are, Peter. And for more information and to support Elmer's preservation, you can go to science.org. cranbrook.edu/Elmer. And I hope you'll do that to learn more and maybe help support. science.cranbrook.edu/Elmer. And you've given us a heads up, Mr. Chancellor, that you're going to be doing more with Cranbrook, and I suspect you'll be reaching out to all the great people around here and doing more, because that's what you've always done for Oakland Community College. Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure catching up with you. We'll talk again soon.
You as well, and have a great Father's Day, okay?
Hey, a great Father's Day to you as well, Peter. So I wish we had more time, but we're out of it. Pete Provenzano, he is the chancellor of Oakland Community College, and from everything I know about him, and I've known him now for years, he's an all-round great guy. We continue in Focus on WJR. Hour number two with Relentless Positive Radio, while you're on your way to making each and every day count, because you know each day is a gift. We just need to be reminded from time to time. And we know QTR, as Kim tells us, quality time remaining. QTR, we don't know how much we have. Make the most of it. That's why I also say, if you're lucky enough to still have your father in your life and with you, call him. Tell him how much you love him and how thankful you are for all of the sacrifices that he made for you to have the life you have with Father's Day Sunday. He will not be here forever. It's Juneteenth, a federal holiday, so many things you thought were open are not. No mail delivery, no banks, no trading. You said some other things, and I can't remember what they were. Oh, you said municipal pools.
Anything municipal.
Never would have thought of that.
That's just the first municipal thing. Probably no municipal golf courses either.
I don't know. That's unfortunate because it's a great day for golf. I just got a message from Jeff Marcero and his fine brother Mike at the Country Club of Detroit. I think it's the I never participated. The member guest or guest member, whatever it's called. Member guest. Anyway, they're playing 27 holes of golf today.
Wow. They are maniacs.
I haven't played 27 rounds of golf cumulatively in the last 10 years.
Yeah, last time I played golf, I didn't do very well, but I was done after 9, so.
9 is good. 18 is okay. I mean, 18 is what most people play, but 27.
How long does 27 holes of golf take?
Well, for me, it would take days, but I don't know. I'm not sure.
Be a weekend giveaway.
Yeah. 27 days of golf. Oh, no, 27 holes. I want to thank people, too, by the way, for choosing to be a part of our award-winning audience. And we love that you're here. That's why we're here. Mike Parsons, Danielle Mason, Rich Luzinski, and the team that I will name near the end of the program because it's Friday, and I like to thank everybody. Okay, a couple of things here. Do we need to explain Juneteenth? I don't think we do. I think we did. We explained it.
Yeah. Long story short, it commemorates when the last Union soldiers reached Texas to let enslaved.
Union Army Major General Gordon Granger arrived in Galveston, Texas, June 19th, 1865, and though they sat on this for a year or two.
2 years, yeah.
Proclaimed that enslaved African Americans were officially set free.
And so it became a federal holiday in 2021. I know we were talking about it being recent, but I verified it became a national holiday 2021.
Now, we talked about today was supposed to be the day that they signed the peace agreement or whatever arrangement they had. We bet on the side that it wouldn't make it to Friday. And, of course, being Friday, the U.S.-Iran talks postponed as Lebanon clashes strain agreement. The clashes in Lebanon are straining the agreement. That wasn't written so well to understand it. The point being, you will not tell Netanyahu that he cannot defend Israel. No one should try to tell any country that. Yeah. It's kind of why the president is saying he's not even going to take the ballistic missiles away from Iran because they're surrounded by people with ballistic missiles.
And I believe that there was a ceasefire between Lebanon and Israel reached a couple hours ago. But, of course, every ceasefire at this point is tenuous.
Yeah, it is. I hope it's true. I hope it holds. I hope everyone involved understands what a better world they would live in if they would stop fighting in the name of God.
Right.
Because there is no God that is giving their blessing to this kind of activity. Vance warns Israel, don't fight the only ally that you have. That's kind of coming to the point, isn't it?
Yeah, and I guess there were reports that Netanyahu and members of his cabinet are none too pleased with the memorandum of understanding. So I guess VP Vance was reacting to that, saying that, "Hey, we're the only country
that
likes you,
that like you and support you in that entire world." In fact, I told you the story. I'll tell it again. I'm flying into Israel for some broadcast or something many years ago. In fact, I was the first full American radio show to broadcast an entire radio show for an entire week from Israel. You've been around as long as I have been. You get a lot of these firsts, broadcast from the White House, all that stuff. So a flight attendant comes up and says, "Mr. Smith," and I went, "Yes." "What did I do wrong?" is what you immediately think. "Yes. The captain would like to see you." And I go, "Well, the captain of the plane wants to see me? We're landing soon, aren't we?" "Yes, we are." So I follow her, and they bring me on the flight deck. Now, this is, El Al has had the best security in the airline industry long before 9/11. I mean, they just have had the best security, period. So I go up front, and I'm standing on the flight deck. There's a pilot, a co-pilot, and an engineer. It was that old of an airplane. They still had an engineer that worked over here on the wall. And we chatted. And he goes, "Oh, you're in broadcasting. We welcome you into Israel, blah, blah, blah." And the co-pilot showed me a little map that was electronic on the area there. And he pointed and said, "You see all of this?" "Yes." "Now, do you see this little dot right there?" And I go, "Yeah, I see the little dot." "Well, that little dot is Israel." "Oh, really, really? And what's all of that all around Israel?" And he said, "The people who want to kill us."
Wow. Enjoy your flight.
have a nice day.
Enjoy your stay.
It really, you know, and the next thing I know is we're landing at Ben Gurion Airport, and I guess Tel Aviv, I'm thinking, and I'm going, I'm standing here behind the I said, "Shouldn't I be strapped in? Shouldn't I be seated somewhere and strapped in?" They go, "No, no, you'll be all right." Now, these are kind of cocky Air Force pilots.
Right.
No question they were in the Air Force. Everybody was. And they were good pilots. And sure enough, we land with me standing, just holding my hands on the back seat of the pilot.
How was that? Was it smooth or were you white-knuckling
it? Smooth? No, it was without any drama. It was smooth. It was wonderful. And like out of a movie, and I may remember this better than it was, but as we touched down at Ben Gurion, white doves from nowhere came flying up in the air.
Wow.
And I went, "Am I in a movie? What is this?" It was phenomenal. Israel is one of the places, and I'm half Lebanese, as far as I know, it's one of the places I've always wanted to take my family, but have been afraid to. It was that great a trip. And we've been very lucky to be a lot of places because of our jobs. But still makes me nervous. I mean, me going there, it's one thing. But to take my family?
Well, yeah, I'd be more nervous right now.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
But you know how many times we could say that? Week after week, month after month, year after year, I'd be more nervous right now.
Right.
It's just the way it is. I hope it's not always that way. Be great if everybody could get their act together in that part of the world, and they would thrive. People would love to visit there. It would become a wonderful vacation destination, and they could all use the money to better everybody's life. Hey, your chance to win a trip to see Lionel Richie, Earth, Wind, and Fire in the city of your choice. We've got your flights, hotel, concert tickets, premium VIP lounge access covered. It's your chance to sing along all night long with Lionel Richie, Earth, Wind, and Fire. Prize provided by Live Nation. Text this hour's national keyword, GROOVE, to 95819. That's GROOVE, G-R-O-O-V-E, GROOVE to 95819. We'll text you back to confirm your entry. Data and messaging rates may apply. Please don't text and drive. Play four times each weekday for four chances to win. Official rules and more at WJR.com. It's 114. As we continue on this Friday, and it's a beautiful Friday, great day for golf, and a lot of people are out there enjoying themselves very much. Boy, in Michigan, we are lucky, 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 are we not? We are. We are very lucky to have all the great golf available to us. We're also lucky to have the great WJR Director of Community Affairs and News available to us as well, Marie Osborne. Federal counterterrorism investigators say a Macomb County man is behind bars, accused of possessing a rifle with its serial number removed, that's a no-no, and with a chilling message etched into it. WJR's Marie Osborne joins us with the details. Good afternoon, Marie.
Hi there, Paul. So according to this newly unsealed federal complaint, 20-year-old Izarelli Maycock of Macomb Township wrote, "There is no God" on the stock of this rifle. The same phrase that Ethan Crumley said in a video recorded the night before killing four students in 2021. Crumley, of course, is serving a life prison for that. Investigators say the rifle was recovered last month after a tip that Maycock was making threatening statements on YouTube. Court documents say that the comments linked to his address praised other mass shooters, including the Christchurch gunman who killed 51 people in 2019. Maycock has been in court. He was in federal court on Thursday. He answered just yes and no to the routine questions. A judge ordered him held without bond until at least next week, and that's when prosecutors are expected to argue that he should remain in jail. He's charged with possessing a firearm and an obliterated serial number. His court-appointed attorney not commenting on the case for now. And, Paul, the case comes amid a surge in threat-related prosecutions nationwide. I was surprised by this number. More than 850 since 2013, with the last year marking a record high. For now, federal investigators say the case is active, and they are continuing to go through Maycock's online activities.
Unbelievable. Really unbelievable. And, you know, people are going to be very upset with me, those who believe in freedom of speech. I believe in freedom of speech. I believe in our right to bear arms. I mean, I believe in all those things. But not when there is, oh, I can't say stupid or stupidity, so bozo-like people involved, I guess. And with all due respect, I liked Bozo. He was a great guy. Anyway, I believe in freedom of speech, but I think we have to draw the line and say freedom of speech is one thing. Freedom of hate is another. And we all should be against hate. And somebody who embraces known murderers is embracing hate. And there's no place on our earth for those people. Now, I know you're not going to accept what I might have considered the ultimate crime and punishment, but don't dare try to tell me that he has a freedom of speech by writing "there is no God" on the stock of his rifle and then finding in his home or wherever homage to all these murderers and think, well, he's just he's exercising his right to free speech. No, he's exercising hate. And the only way we're going to get rid of hate is to get rid of the haters. I don't know what else to say.
You are right about that. That I'm sure that that's probably, I don't know, but perhaps an avenue of defense for his attorney, I suppose, but it appears they've got a lot of evidence here.
He's got a reference to the guy that you mentioned earlier in Christchurch, New Zealand, who killed 51 people and injured dozens more in 2019, live streamed on the internet. I mean, when you get somebody who is celebrating that kind of hatred, you know they don't belong here. why should we walk around being worried about when they explode?
Yes. Yeah. I will say there is one good part of this story.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I'm all ears like King Charles.
No. Well, that somebody turned this person in. They saw those statements on YouTube. They knew that it wasn't right, and they reported that.
Good for them.
This was due to a tip. So
I didn't know that. Yeah, so here we are. We've said it till we're blue in the face. If you see something, say something. And then we added later, years later, but now always say it. If you see something, say something, do something. And people are starting to do that. Have you noticed, Marie?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And thank God for that.
Yeah, because there is a link between people making statements like this. Maybe not all people will act upon their statements like this, these hate statements. But that, you know, there's always that one time. So kudos to whoever this was that, you know, turned this in and made a report on this.
And kudos to Oakland County Prosecutor Karen McDonald, who prosecuted the Crumbly case, for example, and mentioned that these guys all follow, now it seems, a well-known pattern. Quote, in almost every mass shooting, infamy has been shown to be a motive, she said in an emailed release. Quote, while we have not been briefed on this incident, the defendant's reference to the Oxford shooter follows a well-known pattern. Future shooters research and revere prior shooters. In the interest of public safety, we encourage media outlets and the general public to adhere to the no notoriety and don't name them protocols to help prevent future shootings. I've been not using the names of these slugs for as long as I can remember. And I will not give them the name attention that they so long to have, the infamy that they're trying to gain. They should be flushed out of our system and forgotten about forever. Period. Anyway, anything else going on, Riri?
No, but happy Father's Day weekend. I hope you celebrate all weekend long.
Thank you. Thank you. And to John, your fine husband, I wish him a happy Father's Day as well. And for that matter, again, to all the dads listening and all the people who are lucky enough to still have their dad, and you and I, Marie, do not.
Yeah.
But hopefully we did remember to tell them often that we loved them and thanked them for everything they did for us. So for those of you who still have the chance and may not have done this, take it from Marie and me. There's no time like the present, because you have no idea how much QTR, quality time remaining, they have or that you have. Anything else, Riri?
Nope. Let's just celebrate the memories of those that are not here, and we can celebrate that too.
Absolutely well put. Marie Osborne, we continue on WJR 129. Well, it is indeed. And if you have Facebook or YouTube or in a position to look at it, you can see our own Dave Rieger, because now from noon to two, Facebook and YouTube pages are streaming our video live. And you'll see Dave waving right now with his hat. And there's a wonderful picture that was just up with him with popcorn. There it is. Popcorn and a drink. Man, do I want some popcorn. That's a long story. All right. Rieger reviews it. Sponsored by Wigley's famous Eastern Market corned beef. Dine in or carry out the best Wigley's corned beef sandwiches around at Frank's Deli and Grill. And I can attest to that. Frank's Deli and Grill at 3405 Russell Street in Detroit's Eastern Market. They're open every day from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. And while you're there, be sure to say hi to Victor and his boys. Victor's the owner. He loves his customers as much as the corned beef. And I love Victor as much as the corned beef. Way to go at Frank's Deli and Grill, 3405 Russell Street in our Eastern Market. Well, David, I've been waiting for this review of Toy Story 5 because Michigan's Tim Allen does Buzz again.
He's back.
Tom Hanks is Woody. Joan Cusack is Jessie, and I'm told she's like really become the star in this edition. Mm-hmm. And even Conan O'Brien has apparently a very good role which got this this one a PG rating, the first
yes,
first Toy Story to get a PG rating because of his bathroom humor, I guess.
Yes, he plays a toilet training device named Smarty Pants.
I just can't wait to see this.
Yes.
I cannot wait to see it. Talk to us.
This is really good. This is art imitating life. This is toys versus tech. We meet Bonnie again, and she has her toys. You know, she's an introverted little girl. Her parents decide to get her a frog-shaped tablet named Lilypad.
Oh, new technology
correct.
Against the yes. old-fashioned
yes.
toys.
So they think that she can meet other kids with tablets, and then she can become friends, and it will kind of pull her out of her introverted state. Unfortunately, that means that the toys go to the side, and they're not part of her life anymore. So Buzz Lightyear goes and contacts Woody, who you remember at the end of Toy Story 4, stayed at the carnival, and to be with Bo Peep, and now brings him back to help. Because what they find out is that while tablets and technology are great, it kind of, she also runs into cyberbullying. She runs into intimidating online environment and stuff like that. So it really is the story of what kids are dealing with today and the power of the screen time, if you will.
It's in the theaters starting today. Let's listen to Toy Story 5.
Bonnie! There's a package for you.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
Hi there, I'm Lilypad. Let's play.
Oh, extinction, not again.
Bonnie, screen time's over now.
Okay.
I want to talk to you, device.
Please, call me Lily.
Me and the toys have been working all summer to try and get Bonnie to make friends.
Yeah.
But then you had to ruin
it.
You're not even listening to me.
I'm always listening. See?
Now look here. Me and the toys have been working all summer.
Now in Spanish.
What?
Yeah, I got dibs on behind the dresser.
Woody!
Jesse, hello?
Is it as bad out there for toys as they say it is?
We're finding more abandoned toys each day.
We're done!
Tech's invaded our house, too.
I don't know, Jesse. Toys are for play, but tech is...
It's for everything.
Boy, oh boy. They're art imitating life, huh?
Yeah,
How long has Toy Story been around,
Toy Story's franchise? Been around. This is the sixth Toy Story with the one offshoot that they did of Buzz Lightyear. I think the first one was 2000...
It's been a long time.
Oh. Rich says 1995, so it's been a while.
1995, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, so it's been a long time. A lot of people, I think they love Toy Story 1, they love Toy Story 2, Toy Story 3 and 4, are mixed reviews, but I think people will like this one. I'll give it 3 Wigglies. I thought it was very well done. It's Disney, it's Toy Story, it's Tom Hanks, it's Tim Allen. And
our Tim Allen, Michigan's
yes.
Tim Allen.
And
I read a piece where he had to go to New York mm-hmm. to a voice coach to be able to get his voice back
yeah.
as a Buzz, which
I believe
is
it.
Fascinating. Huh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, they've been doing it for many years. And it's so funny because there's a scene where Woody comes back and he's got a bald spot. And it's like somebody says like this. Somebody needs like a brown marker, you know. It's so funny.
Oh, that is funny. So, all right. Let's see here.
Well done.
All right. How did I mess these papers up? Well, because I'm me, and that's what I do. Cape Fear.
Yes.
So three
Wigglies for Toy Story, yes.
For Toy Story. Yes. What do we like? Let's listen to Cape Fear, which is appearing now on Apple TV.
Let me ask you a question. What is your worst fear?
Max Cady was released from prison.
What does that have to do with us?
He's been locked up for 17 years for a murder he didn't do.
You were his lawyer, right?
I had a good life once, too. Are you afraid of me?
Why would I be afraid of you? Is there any way Max could know about what we did?
Speak of the devil.
Okay, so this really makes me want to see Toy Story 5.
Yeah, this one's really, this one's a little bit different than the previous two Cape Fears. The first one in 1962, Robert Mitchum. The second one in 1991 with Robert De Niro as the Max Cady character. This one is a 10-part series that is on Apple TV. I think there are four that are out so far.
Started June 5th.
Yes, they give one every Friday. So you can catch up quickly on what you may have missed. This one, obviously, is Javier Bardem. He plays a great villain as
Watch
Max Cady. And
yes.
Patrick Wilson and Amy Adams play the two lawyers. If you remember the original Cape Fears, it was the lawyer and the wife. This one is the husband is the prosecuting attorney. The wife was his defense attorney. They fell in love, put him into jail for a crime he did not commit.
He
feels that they conspired with each other to put him into jail. So now he's terrorizing them, but in a modern way, using artificial intelligence, using, catfishing. So a little bit different than the original Cape Fears, and those were two-hour movies.
It sounds interesting.
It is very good. I give this one also three Wigglies. I think people will like it. I'm a big Javier Bardem guy. Okay.
Yes.
And he plays a great villain. No Country for Old Men. He was in the James Bond. He played the villain in James Bond, the one that was kind of a throwback to the old days. So, but I think people will enjoy it.
All right. You're giving it three Wigglies as well. Yeah. Dave has a great new job, and he does a great job with it. Dave Rieger, thank you, sir, for your help, as always.
Thank you, Paul W.
We continue in focus. We'll close out with the person who would like to be our next governor, and she seems to be doing pretty well in that race. Stay with us on WJR. I have standing by for a quick update our fine Michigan Secretary of State, who happens to be the leading Democrat gubernatorial candidate. In fact, she's not just leading Chris Swanson. She appears to be leading Mike Cox, John James, Perry Johnson on the Republican side as well. I'm talking about our Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson. Madam Secretary, welcome back.
Hi, Paul. Happy Juneteenth. Great to be here.
Well, that's kind of what got our attention, your op-ed in the Michigan Chronicle on Juneteenth. Can you kind of sum that up for us?
Yeah, well, you know, I started my career doing civil rights work and moved to Detroit to clerk for Damon Keith long ago. And I think this is a day where we sort of reflect on the ongoing work we need to do to ensure that everyone can afford to live in Michigan and that no community is left behind. And that's what this campaign is really about. So I'm taking today to talk to people in Detroit and all around the state about that vision for making Michigan more affordable. And we've had a great series of events and a great tip for us all to reflect on what we're all going to do to continue the work for equality and justice and our democracy in the years ahead.
Listen, it's best to be in the lead, but I also know you don't take anything for granted. So you're not taking anything for granted on all of this.
Not at all. I'm a marathoner, Paul. You know that. I like to take one step at a time, one day at a time, and I stay present and just doing everything I can to reach as many voters in this state on both sides of the aisle, frankly. You know, this is my fourth statewide campaign. I'm taking seriously the opportunity and responsibility to connect with everyone in every one of our 83 counties about how I've got a plan to reduce costs, improve our public education system, grow our economy, and keep people safe in their communities.
Well, yeah, look, you've been in all those 83 counties. You've been doing your work.
Yes.
So you're clearly the best known candidate. And just as we're sitting here, I'm thinking about the average person, and I'm looking at one of my television monitors, and I'm not kidding. They had a Mike Cox, John James, Perry Johnson trifecta of commercials that ran right after, one after the other after the other. I couldn't tell who they were for and who they were against. They were so confusing. They were three different commercials for the three different candidates. But, you know, in the old days, we used to separate those. There's no such thing anymore. And I think it causes for great confusion among the voters.
You know, there's a lot of noise out there, and I got news for you. The noise is not going to get any better between now and November, but I am coming into this race as the only candidate who has actually connected in a real way with voters in every one of our counties, because people know through coming to our branch offices and working with me as Secretary of State for these last almost 8 years that I know how to fix broken systems and improve their lives and save people time and save people money and make their life easier. That's what I've done as Secretary of State. That's what I'm going to do as governor. And I encourage people to just, you know, block out the noise and focus on results. Who's delivered? Who do you trust to deliver continuously for improving our state? We're going to make that case to voters, not just on the air, but on the ground as well, and showing up at community events and meetings all across the state. And I hope that'll enable us to make the case to every voter that I'm the best positioned and best ready to lead the state into the future.
The leading Democrat gubernatorial candidate, our Michigan Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson, with us here in Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. How did you find out that you were being endorsed by Detroit Mayor Mary Sheffield?
You know, the Detroit mayor has done so many great things already in her short tenure. Mayor Sheffield has been a great friend of for decades, ever since I was working as a teacher at Wayne State, and she was starting out on city council. So our friendship goes back a long way, and you're going to see a real partnership between her and I. You know, I live in Detroit. I'm going to continue living in Detroit as governor and continue to make sure she and, frankly, mayors all around our state have the support they need do their jobs in the communities they represent. So I was so honored to be one of the first people she's ever endorsed for anything as mayor. And I think you're going to see her be an active part of our campaign in the months ahead. And we'll be working together a lot at the state and local level
when you said,
if I'm able to win this race.
You said about you live in Detroit and you said you're going to continue to live in Detroit. So I'm not confused, and no one is. You will live in the governor's home in Lansing.
Well, we'll certainly, you know, like past governors have done, use that residence for the public as it's meant to be, and opportunities for people to come and celebrate and come together and spend time with me as a governor. But, you know, I'm raising my son in Detroit. This is his home, and it's going to continue to be a home for him in the years ahead. And it's a unique thing about being a mom and a human and also a governor, you know, balancing both roles, but making sure as well that I'm staying close to the city that I call home, even as I lead the entire state. I've done that as Secretary of State as well, so I know how to balance all of the above.
Good for you. Well, congratulations so far with this race. You're taking nothing for granted, but you're leading ahead of Chris Swanson, and for that matter, ahead of Mike Cox, John James, Perry Johnson so far. Always a pleasure speaking with you, Madam Secretary.
Thanks for having me, Paul, and I'll talk to you soon. Have a great weekend.
And what's the website again?
JocelynBenson.com. You can see my policy positions on a number of things and my plan to reduce costs on everything from healthcare to housing to energy for all Michiganders.
That's nice and easy. Thanks much, Madam Secretary. That's going to wrap it up for the day and for the week. I hope that you will have a fabulous Father's Day and will remember to wish your dad, if you are lucky enough to be able to do that, a fabulous Father's Day. It's the team. I'm running out of time. Mike Parsons, Daniel Mason, Rich Luzinski, Ray Templin, Dave Rigger, Marie Osborne, Ann Thomas, Kim Smith, and you. Regards, Paul W. Smith.